mythology around the campground that it was somehow some great shooting gallery and a violent place and a horrible, nasty, miserable place. It had a lot of problems. It wasn't kept up by CCH. There was drug use. But there was never any deaths at that campground while it was open, while a significant number of people died after it was dispersed, thanks to Mayor Mike Rotkin, Councilmember Scott Kennedy, and the silence of Catherine Byers and Celia Scott, who, by the way, has come out in favor of the ending the sleeping ban. That's a white mark for Celia Scott. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good evening, Mr. Norris.
Good evening. It sounds like Bob LaMonica.
Yes, it is. How are you doing, Robert?
I'm good. Have you been listening to our show, Bob?
Not the first hour, in fact. I did not. What was the activity?
Oh, I did not. Just wondered if you've been following the recent conversation. Some folks call in outside the range of the broadcast signal.
I'm a backsliding religious follower of your show, Robert.
Well, you better get on board, Bob.
Yeah.
Well, I know you spoke to me earlier about the prospects of a kind of a troika of initiatives for next March, of a rent control initiative, a sleeping ban repeal initiative, and then a downtown pedestrian mall initiative.
Well, there will certainly be a pedestrian mall initiative. Mm-hmm. And remember, there's an election in March 2000, which is a general election. It's the first Tuesday in March, and if you back up from there, we're just kind of guesstimating now, but if you back up about 4 months for all the deadlines, it would make the window for circulating signatures from about July through November, let's just say. That's a very good weather window. I think that the initiative process is very useful with these types of issues. I think that the way to raise the issues in impeccable terms is with initiatives. And certainly the sleeping ban deserves another run for the ballot. And I think rent control's time has come in this town. I think it is extremely unrealistic to assume that at $6 an hour, appropriate housing can be achieved for the average low-income Santa Cruzan. And regulation, the reason why one goes for something like rent control is that these industries, the housing industry, does not self-regulate in responsible human terms. And so one says that, all right, let's use the tool of government to impose. I realize that's heavy, but it's sincere. And Santa Cruz has attempted rent control measures in the past. They've failed. Maybe this time it could have a chance to make it to ballot. Even if it doesn't make it to ballot, it certainly raises the issue of housing, of low-cost housing.
I know that Trust, the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, is definitely interested in a renter's bill of rights and renter's protections, and I encourage folks listening in to give a call to the Tenants' Rights Union at 426-0644 to get the latest updates on what the landlord lobby is up to in Sacramento. I know that they've been able to really gut rent control statewide with, I guess, the Ellis Act, I think that's what it's called. I actually have a story here, Bob, which I was going to be reading shortly from the San Francisco Examiner. Landlord wins Ellis Act jury trial, which San Francisco Superior Court jury has sided with a landlord couple who sued two families occupying their building to get them evicted under the Ellis Act. After one day of deliberation, the jury on Friday unanimously ruled in favor of a married couple who wanted to take their Noe Valley property off the rental market so they could move in, or at least that's what they said. The case was the first of its kind to make its way to trial following a ruling last year that gave tenants new hopes in fighting Ellis Act evictions. Attorney Alex Weiland said his clients, landlords Jason and Ming Yuck, were relieved with the verdict, but exhausted from nearly 2 years of legal wrangling with the current tenants and the city of San Francisco for the right to move into their own property. And then there's a history of the case. Of course, San Francisco has been more diligent in trying to protect the rights of the renters somewhat, although if you talk to tenant activists up there, you find Willie Brown hasn't been their pinup boy either. I don't know much about the Ellis Act. You know, I think we should probably do a whole show on rent control at some point in the future, but I'm gonna roll ahead. Is there more you want to talk about around this issue?
Well, I mean, I'll just stress the importance of using the system in the ways that it's designed to gather credibility. And as I have said before on your show, Robert, there's a place for the rant, but there's also a place for being polite and diplomatic, and I believe you get a lot more out of the latter. And I don't want to offend anybody, but I think a lot of people who consider themselves to be activists who have never done any signature gathering, you really want to do something that has some significance. Wouldn't it have been wonderful if the sleeping band made it to ballot? Okay. You want to do something that's significant for 3 hours a week, gather signatures on an issue that you support. And if you don't support the system, what are you doing going in front of the city council ranting and cussing? And do you really think that that's going to get you anything?
Well, thank you, Bob.
You bet.
All right.
Well, of course, I take issue with Bob. I think there are many ways to proceed, and, you know, one of them is direct civil disobedience. I don't know if Martin Luther King was too much involved in trying to register voters in Mississippi and Alabama in the early days. I think he was into direct action, but of course it was not possible to vote in those towns if you were black. Of course, if you're homeless in Santa Cruz, as the task force to examine the camping ordinance proved, you didn't get much of an opportunity to attend their meetings. They scheduled their meetings at times when homeless people had meals. They refused to suspend the sleeping ban during the period of time when they were considering stuff, so people couldn't sleep without being afraid of being harassed or awakened at night. And although police did largely suspend ticketing during that period, they did not suspend harassment. They did not suspend demanding people move on. They did not suspend midnight rousts. So I don't know what the answer is to proceeding. I know that we have to take a variety of avenues. I think I feel exhausted when I look at the prospect of a voter registration or a voter signature gathering drive. I was skeptical about it a year and a half ago when we first started it. I didn't think we had the person power to do it. And of course, then we ran into El Nino and sickness and thefts of signatures and all kinds of problems. And that doesn't mean it can't be done. That doesn't mean it shouldn't be done. It's one possibility among a number of avenues should be tried. And again, I remind you, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadside's twice-weekly civil rights show. Your call in number, 427-3772.
Some were paupers
kings, and some were masters of the arts. But in their shame, they're all the same, these men with broken hearts. Life sometimes can be so cruel that a heart will pray for death. God, why must these living dead know pain with every breath? So help your brother along the road, no matter where he starts. For the God that made you made them too. These men with broken hearts.
And you can blame Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, Housing Now in Santa Cruz activist, for that last song, but we have to throw a little country in to show, hey, who says we don't have a variety of activity and voices here on the air? You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and there's a caller.
Hi, caller.
Just Bob here again.
Ahead,
I just wanted to make some comments on the last comment you made, Robert. Thank you for letting
sure.
me get back on. If you want to look at tangible results of what came out of the sleeping ban repeal initiative last year, you can look at the task force hearings. You can look at all the endorsements that were gathered. They wouldn't have happened without there being a tangible shape to the issue. What an initiative does is it gives shapes to an issue. All those endorsements were endorsing the sleeping ban repeal initiative. I think we got to be clear on this.
That's
the
true.
Audience ought to be clear on it.
Sure, no, I think that certainly is true, although the flip side of that is the task force went nowhere and the endorsements have thus yet yielded no fruit, but I think it's good that we have them, no question about
well,
it.
Well, you can't, the task force, the issue is not dead. It's never been further above board. I don't think the city council is anywhere near being finished with this. It raised it to a very new level of credibility. To me, in the 90s, the late 90s and the turn of the century, I think initiatives, because they are impeccable for a lot of issues, is the way to go. I personally find somewhat detestable the route that certain people that call themselves activists take, because all they really do is put off people, burn bridges, and make it very difficult for anybody with any credibility to align themselves with an issue that they might even agree with.
Perhaps you should be more specific.
When you cuss at a council meeting, when you attack individual council members publicly, you cannot expect to get anything in return other than at best being ostracized. If that is one's routine, then one's grandstand is essentially being ostracized.
Are you
and having somebody to blame.
Are you speaking about our favorite talk show host here?
I'm not speaking about anybody in particular. I'm speaking about a scenario in general that is a dead end.
Uh-huh.
When it's used exclusively. Now, there's certainly room for theatrics in politics, in anybody's opinion. But if you want to be effective and you want to work with the system, then the initiative process is there in many cases to help raise the credibility of an issue, give it tangibility, give it shape, so that those with credibility can support it. And without the support of those with credibility, you're not going to get anywhere. It doesn't matter what the issue is.
Well,
all you're going to do is be ranting to the wind. And in fact, I think that it really needs to be stressed and said that an overabundance of that kind of activity is simply destructive to whatever cause that one purports.
Well, there certainly is room for a variety of opinions on this.
And a lot of people that call themselves activists, in many cases, have never gathered a single signature in their life for any issue, which is work. You want to really work on an issue, see what it's like to spend a couple of hours a week gathering signatures, dealing with the public
in a
real meaningful way.
You know, Bob, I think people work in different ways, and I think that, you know, some people are sort of muckrakers and kind of expose the abuses of people in power to public light.
I think what it is, and I'm going to be real bold here, I think that for a lot of people, certain people, that it's beneath them.
It's been...
It's beneath them to gather signatures.
They're
above that in their own thinking.
That's pretty,
when
pretty
the fact of the matter
them,
is, if you look at the sleeping band alone, the reason why it got as far as it got, and it got far as I'm concerned, was because it was given a tangible, credible basis for support. And a lot of support came out for the sleeping band repeal initiative.
Well, thank you, Bob, for
thank you.
Returning with your thoughts.
Thank you very much.
And what do you think? Is it time for another initiative to repeal the sleeping ban? Is it time to whip out your sleeping bags and head downtown? Is it time to do high-profile demonstrations that are colorful but not technically illegal, but nonetheless encourage the community to see what's going on? It's time to answer the phone.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. It's Vinny again. I just have a few quick comments about the last caller. And I want to start off by saying I agree to a certain extent with the point he was making. However, a lot of people that call themselves activists are fed up with the system and the slow pace that this system has and the crumbs that we get when we eventually do try to work with the system. So yes, a lot of people put their energies towards other things like direct action, like civil disobedience, other types of behaviors like that. And I do see the need for signature gathering for this type of thing, but we all have to understand that everybody has their own tactics for dealing with issues, and we all need to support each other in those efforts because we're all working against the same real enemy, and that is the system. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Joseph Nasworthy.
And what happened, Joseph?
I was pulled over by a sheriff. I lit up a cigarette and I weaved just a little bit. He pulled me over and then he asked me why my eye pupils, you know, were small, and I told him I was on a drug program, on the methadone program, and he goes, do you have a prescription? And I said, yes. And he said, can I search your car? And I said, no. And he goes, okay, step out of the car, please. He gave me the field sobriety test. And then he put me in the back of his car. And I go, what are you doing? And he goes, I'm detaining you. And I thought he was going to take me to jail and tow my car. So I said, here's my keys. Go ahead, search my car. He's still tow all my stuff away and stuff. So he kept me in the car, and then he took me out, field sobriety tested me again, which I passed. Otherwise, he would have took me to jail. And then put me back into the car, and then the CHP came, field sobriety tested me again, I passed. Then he put me in the back of the car. Again, and the CHP and him talked. I couldn't hear what they were saying because I was in the back of the car and I couldn't. He let me out of the car and he goes, okay, you're free to go. Have a nice day. Goodbye. And then he used Nazi tactics to get what he wanted, which is to search my car, which is clean. There is not one single thing illegal in the car. When he opened up my locked box with the methadone in it, one was empty, one had methadone in it. Any idiot can see that, you know, that my eyes don't respond to a normal person's pupils because of the medication.
What was the name
of
the deputy?
Deputy Murphy.
And when did this happen?
It happened about a little over a week ago.
And where did it happen?
Right by the firehouse on Ziony Road by the trout farm right there. I've already went to Eternal Affairs.
How'd that work?
Well, the sergeant said that he was filing his own complaint. I filed my complaint, a real long written complaint, and filed it and put it in. He said that I would receive something in my P.O. box that would
a form letter, probably.
Right. But the bottom line is, this isn't the first time. It's happened to me a lot of times, and they always call me a liar, and they always tell me that I'm under the influence of drugs, and
is this the first time you filed a complaint with the internal?
Yeah, system? I couldn't take it anymore. I just couldn't take it anymore. And I'm going to get a cellular phone. I got the number of the sergeant in internal affairs. So if I get pulled over by a sheriff and they start doing this eye thing with the flashlight and all that, I can call the guy at internal affairs and tell him, will you explain to this stupid sheriff what methadone is and stuff, so he'll quit calling me a liar and a drug addict and demean me and stuff. I could be with a Christian woman or something. I could be with my family member. This is a confidential program where I don't even have to tell them that I'm on this program. You know, it's a confidential program where they won't give the police or anybody any information. Is Joe Nasworthy on this program? I'm sorry, I can't give you that information. I'm on it right now. Do I look drunk? Do I look stoned? No. Right?
No.
I don't at all, do I?
No. You look angry at the memory of what happened.
Three field sobriety tests I passed. He should have let me go after the first one.
Sounds like harassment. I appreciate your letting us all know about this, Joe.
Yeah, thanks for talking to me.
To an anonymous person, but you say that it is true that people were getting beaten up by troll busters, and then apparently they got troll busters themselves, these people attacking homeless people for sport, got turned on and kicked, beaten themselves.
Yeah, they got kicked, and, you know, people just out there trying to sleep, you know, we're homeless, whatnot, whoop, whoop, and, you know, some places, you know, you can find a spot that, you know, when it rains, you can still stay dry and, you know, be sleeping there. But some people, you know, like to make a game out of it and go down there and, you know, beat people up and stuff. And you know, we don't like to put up with that kind of stuff.
I hope not, man. Yeah.
So people retaliated against them, and they haven't showed back up yet. So,
any details on how this happened? Or you said it was about a couple of weeks ago. Did they say they invaded a camp and they got hit themselves?
Yeah.
Hit or?
Yeah, well, we're sleeping on a dock, a loading dock.
Right.
And they come over and...
How many of them were there?
There's a couple, like four, mm-hmm. five. And
I heard it was four.
And they come over and they just, you know, start kicking people while they're in the sleeping bags and stuff. You know, grabbing the top of the sleeping bag and You know, I'm trying to, like, keep them inside their sleeping bag in a way and throw them around, and, you know.
And what happened to these guys?
Well, after a while, people started staying awake and waiting for them, and, mm-hmm. you know, and finally they came by and they got what, you know, was coming to them. You know what I mean? And, you know, they don't come by anymore now. So
I heard they were also retaliated against.
That's my troll buster right here.
And you're pointing to your dog.
Yeah.
And the name of this pooch is
Blanco.
Actually, that's your troll buster buster.
That's my troll buster buster. He sleeps with me.
Hey, Blanco.
I can't wait till somebody comes up on me. Because that only time he'll bite somebody is when they come into camp. He's the nicest dog. You ever seen him? This dog is the most mellow dog. But come into camp with him. And I tell you what, he handles it. Yeah, it's a different story.
So, what about tickets? People have been getting tickets from police. How have police been treating campers and sleepers?
Lately, where I've been at, over on the loading dock, they've been letting everybody's kick it there, but the police department's been really kind of lenient, so to say, on that, because it's got no loitering signs everywhere, and we're not supposed to be there. But
how many people on the average night sleep there?
Sometimes it could be 3 to 4, and sometimes there's the whole dock's pretty loaded.
Yeah.
You know,
10 or 11, or
yeah, it just depends on how bad the rain is coming in that night. It's a good spot to sleep at night. You know, it's a dry spot.
It's coming down pouring.
So the police know people are there, but generally they're not going after them.
No, they know if it's raining and stuff. They just pretty much cruise by early morning. You know, make sure everybody leaves before the business opens up and stuff.
And do people leave a mess or do they leave it pretty clean?
They leave it pretty clean on the most part. Some people, you know, leave a little mess here and there, but, you know, the other people that stay there, they see that and they help out and pick it up.
City Council tonight is going to be voting on the sleeping ban. Unfortunately, they're not going to take any real vote on changing the law. They're going to talk about simply lessening the fine. Should there be a law against sleeping in Santa Cruz?
Yeah and no. Well, it just depends. You know, they should put some kind of a designated area or certain places where it's cool and certain places it's not cool to go and sleep, you know? I can understand, you know, you can't have people in front of your business every morning, you know, and you're trying to, you know, run a business. You can't have people sleeping out front. I understand that. But, you know, where are we going to sleep? You know, we can't sleep out in the woods. It's against the law. We can't sleep inside the city. It's against the law. So what can we do? You know what I mean? There's got to be something done. There's really something needs to be done.
How are you treated downtown? You spend much time downtown?
Not sleeping much. I normally stay away from busyness.
How about walking? If you go downtown during the day, how do you think? You're homeless yourself?
Yeah.
And how long you been homeless?
I've been here in Santa Cruz the last 5 years.
And would you say people are flocking to Santa Cruz because they have such wonderful services, or not?
I don't know about that, but I do know it's a nice place, you know, to be. I came across this on my way up to Oregon. I stopped for 4 days, and I ended up being here for 5 years, so it's a nice place. It really is.
And have you gotten many camping tickets and sleeping tickets during that time?
A few.
And do you generally camp pretty deeply, or do you generally, you know, have you got friends on the police department? I mean, if you've been homeless that whole time and you slept out every night, does that argue that the police here are fairly lenient, or that you're a good kind of hidden camper, or do you camp outside the city, or what?
I camp outside the city. I mostly go deep in the woods where the cops ain't going to go out there unless the rangers or someone like that is called them on a case that, you know, they found somebody. But I maybe had 4 to 5 tickets.
How's the homeless services center here, this place, treating you? How do you feel it is properly run? Do you have complaints? Do you have commendations? What do you got?
It's a good resource center, you know, on the long run. You know, they're here to help out anybody, you know. If you're coming through town, they'll help you out with food and supplies. If you're here to stay, You know, they'll help you out with, you know, food and showers.
You'd never guess, but once upon a time, this land of ours
was sick, infirm, and doddering, robbed of all its powers.
People lay in bed all day, only arose to collect their pay.
Life for them was just a bowl of flowers.
They bred like rabbits, coupling day and night. Claimed the child allowance as their right. Fell sick of diseases of all descriptions just to collect the three prescriptions. Often broke a limb just out of spite. Eye and dental treatment, they were free. Part of the welfare state's conspiracy. Cheap housing and cheap transport, they were tricks to lead us all astray. And see life as an endless holiday.
The poor were disaffected with ideas above their station.
Like jobs for all and preschool meals, a decent education.
The writing, it was on the wall, then was heard the clarion call.
And Finchley's queen rode over the horizon.
I hope to God, she cried, I'm not too late
to perform a miracle and set things straight. To fight the good fight and raise the flag for a new society of grab and fashion the modern cost-effective state. She need the unions in the crutch with scorn, saying I mean to do what I have sworn.
Shatter the night with fractured bowels,
grit and twist of the nation's bowels, and the economic miracle was born. And then the January bumper sale was organized,
and patriotic spivs and multinationals were advised
that the country was up for grabs, and so whoever turned up with a pile of dough would get a chunk of Britain as the prize.
She stood behind the counter full of zeal,
sold telephones, Rolls Royce and British Steel.
She sold what wasn't hers to sell, like British Airways gas as well, and threw in North Sea oil to clinch the deal.
When she talks of future plans, she waxes lyrical,
while some of the rest of us become hysterical.
Water, DHS, and coal mines are in the privatization pipeline, along with railways, the army, prisons, royal ordnance, the electricity system, education, etc., etc., and even perhaps the air we breathe. And this is the lady's economic miracle.
And that was Peggy Seeger and Ewan McCall. Sharp satirical singers, the naming of names. Ewan's been dead for about 5 years. Peggy sings on. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norse. And we're coming up on the last 20 minutes of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, twice weekly show covering civil rights for the poor. Our next show will be on Sunday, and that will be starting at 11 o'clock in the morning, running till 1:30. And again, 2 weeks from today, a special show with a hot topic, the sleeping ban, should it be repealed? A debate between Michael Rotkin and I believe we're going to have David Silva on the other end, though we're still waiting to get confirmation. A lot of us are really tired of the city council and spending a lot of time interacting with the city council, and I wouldn't blame David if he begged off on this one. But in my mind, Councilmember Rotkin really is the man to trounce on the sleeping ban. The man to show his the arguments that he presents have to be responded to, not because most of them have substance, but because most of them have plausibility. They're usually rushed out, and actually this, the current city council, ironically, mostly in the persons of Keith Sugar and Chris Crone, to some extent Catherine Byers, have been responding to the arguments by Rotkin, sometimes with action, which has been quashed by Byers. Sugar tried to press for an amendment in December that would have allowed homeless people to sleep unless some other illegal activity was going on. That was crushed by Fitzmaurice, Byers, and Rotkin. Again, Sugar tried to pass something in February that said that if shelters were closed, then the tickets would not be issued for camping.
and that was also crushed in a debate with Rodkin. So I think that people have to come to understand and see through the arguments that Mike Rodkin uses, and I'm hoping that they can do that by having so incisive a thinker and articulate a speaker as David Silvan. And of course, I will be moderating. I will have to withdraw from my partisan position in order to make sure that both sides get equal time, but I think that David can take care of himself, and if not, maybe we'll invite Keith Sugar to join him to back him up. That is, if Keith will come into the same room with me. It's always, of course, an open question. He hasn't returned a call of mine in 2 months, I think it is now, maybe a month and a half. But, hey, times change, and one can always hope. It's interesting. I remember we spoke, well, you heard me interviewing Ray Acosta and his disillusionment with the Fort Ord housing, all this 13,000 elements of housing boarded up, and then 40 were going to be available for veterans, and then he learned that, oh no, those 40 are for transitional housing, they're not for real housing. It's interesting, we have the same situation here in Santa Cruz. Paige Smith, who really gave a very eloquent denunciation of the sleeping ban. He was one of the founders of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which I've had numerous disagreements with, but not on the issue of the sleeping ban. Actually, he attacked the broader camping ordinance, not just the sleeping ban sections. Paige Smith's community house project, as he originally conceived it, was to be really low-income housing. It wasn't to be some kind of halfway house, prison, babysitting ward for adults where you got checked in and couldn't have sex and couldn't have privacy in your room with another person and, you know, had to be drug tested day and night. I'm not quite sure how frequently they drug test you, but I'm sure they do drug test you at this highly touted, highly expensive community house project, which supplanted the River Street campground and which is being bruited about and touted as the great victory of this city council, along with the above the lines youth shelter out in, I guess, beyond Aptos. It's not that these projects are necessarily bad, but they don't in any way constitute very low income housing or affordable housing for homeless people. They just don't. And to pretend they do is hogwash, and to tout this as some kind of solution to homelessness is also hogwash. It's a solution to middle-class joblessness if you're going into social service work in a limited way. It doesn't deal with the mass problem for homeless people at all. Interestingly enough, I just got a sort of a, on the side note, I just got a call from the Winter Shelter Advisory Board today. Sue Gilchrist, this is the board that's supposed to be taking care of winter shelter for homeless people. It's a city-county board. And I brought the issue to the county in the person of Marty Wormhout, our supervisor. Some have called this the Board of Stupid Vipers. I wouldn't dare to say such a thing for perhaps being accused of name-calling on the air. But Marty Wormhout told me 3 weeks ago she was going to look. I brought the issue up of let's have the county do something around this crisis, provide some a campground area for homeless people, a parking lot, at least a statement that the of support for those seeking to repeal the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance. Marty actually cut off discussion of this issue when I brought it to the Winter Shelter Armory Advisory Board, when I mentioned that the Women's Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, the city board, had said, yes, please end the sleeping ban because homeless women are unsafe. They can't go to the police because they have to worry about warrants. They can't sleep in groups and be safe. They have to worry about troll busters. Marty was, took it upon herself, and I played the tape, I guess. I have it here actually in the studio. Might play it again before the hour's up, but I think I got better things to play. She just interrupted and said, we have no jurisdiction here, and we're not going to talk about it. And that's how it goes. And I said, what kind of a winter shelter advisory body is this that doesn't care about the winter shelter situation of most of the homeless people it's charged with helping? And I've just learned that they've canceled the meeting that they were supposed to have today because people among them, Marty Wormhout, just weren't coming. The word on winter shelter, by the way, for next year is they will have the armory, and they will have it till 2001 for the winter months. But of course, after March 31st, there is no winter armory shelter. There's less than 30 floor spaces on rotating churches every night for 500 to 1,500 homeless people. And there's a law that makes it criminal for people to sleep outdoors or in a vehicle. Really,
Very little more needs to be said than that. What do we do now is really the question. What do we get out of this task force thing? I've attacked it savagely, and I don't want to back down from that position. I think it has to be attacked. I think the position of Chris Krohn and Keith Sugar continues to be really, not just really disappointing, but in a way a form of betrayal. If they are so timid that they cannot form an alternate position to the left of Catherine Byers that they articulate clearly, persuasively, and persistently, then they're kind of useless, at least on this issue. And I was pleased to see Chris Krohn come in with a series of letters that in essence said, end the sleeping ban. That was at the Tuesday night meeting. These were letters he brought forward. The only trouble was he didn't bring forward any resolution which said end the sleeping ban. The only resolution he came up with was let people sleep in driveways in a vehicle with the permission of the owner for however long the owner wants them to, which is a reasonable enough thing because right now they're limiting it to 3 days, but of course doesn't address the needs of the majority of homeless people and doesn't address the basic moral issue of the human right to sleep. You know, and I've heard some folks say in the course of this, one, I think the Harvey West Association board spokesperson, a sort of a crusty fellow, nice enough guy, my mind terribly misguided. He called for no changes at all in the camping ordinance, not even the minor cosmetic changes that Catherine Byers and her task force were able to pass, rather than real changes. He talked about I'm losing my thought on this. But what I was thinking earlier about this whole situation, one of the things that came out of the task force, is that we really need a group of mediators to help neighbors in these high-tension areas like Harvey West. So when Harvey West neighbors call the police department, and the police department, apparently, according to Harvey West neighbors, the police department is not responding to complaints about people engaging in poo-pooing, pee-peeing, leaving needles around, and even sleeping in vehicles in front of their homes. And they link all these activities together. I suggest, and this is what actually was done in Oregon, that we have a volunteer group that offers to go out and mediate these problems as they come up. So when a Harvey West merchant or a downtown neighbor who presents arguments that I really regard as utterly preposterous, but obviously they're not preposterous to the downtown neighbors, comes up with a concern, they can actually call someone like at Huff and say, we got some homeless person in front of our house and we're scared to death that they're going to kidnap our kids. Can you help us? You know, and then one of us can go down and, you know, smoke a joint with the homeless person and say, you know, these guys are freaking out. Can you move a block, please? And they'll relax. Is that okay? What do you think? Rather than send in the cops, which, of course, is what the neighbors try to do, I guess what particularly the Harvey West Association claims they're trying to do and not being successful at. So I think this might be an educational opportunity for us. It's not going to be any fun, mind you, and I don't think it really is something that we're obliged to do. But I think it might be useful for a number of reasons. I think I think it's something should be considered because the city council is paying a lot of attention to these idiots, and I got to say they're idiots, in the sense that they're apprehensive people who I think are advancing preposterous arguments that don't really hold water. They don't want to lift the sleeping ban in another part of town because they're concerned about people sleeping in front of their houses, even though it doesn't affect their neighborhood. I mean, this is what the downtown neighbors said repeatedly. They're the folks that are in the downtown area. And the Harvey West, they have more justification for talking about this because Harvey West is a sort of an industrial zone. We were talking about opening up that zone to vehicular sleeping and maybe even Harvey West Park to a campground. The residential number of residents in Harvey West is relatively low, and a certain proportion of them actually support repealing the sleeping ordinance. As I said, in Eugene, they actually don't send in the cops now when there's a complaint about the camping ordinance and vehicles, and it may even be in non-vehicular sleeping and camping too. They send in some sort of city-funded coordinator. And the whole idea of sending in a mediator rather than the police may be a good one, although it could be a trap too, because bureaucrats are bureaucrats and you don't know what they're going to do. But I think a private group of people concerned with civil rights acting as a buffer here and a facilitator might be a one way to go. So I put that out as an idea for folks to think about. I'm probably about going to be bounced quickly by Uncle Dennis, who is rigorously on time. In fact, he's usually early. So I'm going to play right now a bit of a conversation I had with Nancy McCready, who is a homeless rights activist in Santa Barbara, California, about 250 miles to the south. Santa Barbara has also had a discussion of the sleeping ban, and it also had their discussion last Tuesday. In Santa Barbara, you can actually put issues on the city council agenda, unlike in Santa Cruz, where you have to beg and plead and whine and lick the toes of council members to get them to do this, or else gather thousands of signatures to get an initiative on the ballot. You can actually put something on the city council agenda as a citizen or as a resident in Santa Barbara. And they put on the agenda the issue of the sleeping ban because they too have reached a situation where at the end of March they will have no winter armory shelter. Let's hear a little bit of this discussion on what happened. Nancy McCready from Santa Barbara. Hi, Nancy.
How are you doing?
Good. So what's cooking? I hear you had some excitement down there at City Council last night.
Yeah. Who told you that?
Oh, well, remember, I talked to your other neighbor.
Yeah. We were going to
go
over there, and we had the sleeping law back on the agenda.
Well, tell us a little bit about that. What is the situation for sleepers in Santa Barbara right now, for homeless
people?
It's
not really that bad because we have an armory opened up, which is going to be closing on the 1st. And we got an extension on the armory for 2 weeks until the end of the month.
Uh-huh. How many people does the armory serve?
Oh, about 200.
And I know
on the average a night, yeah.
So when I was in Santa Barbara about 5 years ago, they were having problems keeping the hot water on and having showers and such. Has that all been solved?
Not really. They only have 2 bathrooms for all those men.
Mm-hmm.
And the boiler wasn't working, so the heater wasn't working for a long time. They got some space heaters in there.
Mm-hmm.
So that stopped the cold, because it was just about as cold in there as it was in the beginning as it was outside.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't really help, but there was, people had some place to go.
And I guess there were some concerns about the management when I was in town, that there was sort of managers that had been managed by homeless people, and then that was discontinued. Who manages the Armory Winter Shelter in Santa Barbara now?
We have a group called St. Vincent's de Paul that mm-hmm. comes up from L.A.
And what do you think
contracted with the city.
How are they?
Well, I think those people are pretty darn nice.
Mm-hmm.
But the people they hire aren't that great. There's one guy that's good, and the rest of them are a little bit brutal, but, they...
Are these homeless people or non-homeless people?
No, I really don't know. I haven't been over there to check things out.
Uh-huh.
But the complaints from the people is that one of the workers is pretty bad. I know all of them are doing a little bit of drugs to stay up at night, but other than that, it ran pretty well. There wasn't too many complaints.
So there are about 200 people who get into the armory. How many people would you estimate are outside and don't have the benefit of the armory at night but have to sleep outdoors or in their vehicles?
Well, it's not that they have to, except for the ones that are 86th out of the armory, but there are some who prefer.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. If all the homeless in Santa Barbara showed up at the armory, could they be accommodated?
Could they be what?
Could they be let in? Would there be place for them?
Oh, yeah. Anybody could go into the armory.
I mean, is it big enough to take in all the homeless people? I mean, Santa Barbara...
It was pretty crowded this year. I think the largest amount of people they had was 250. That was pretty crowded.
Uh-huh. But what I'm saying is, so here in Santa Cruz, we have a population of about 52,000. We estimate 500 to 1,500 homeless people.
Yeah.
Santa Barbara is,
Oh, it's a lot bigger than that now.
Right, and you're at least 75,000, and probably 120 or 30,000 counting the surrounding communities.
Yeah.
And I don't think you have that much smaller proportionally a homeless population. So.
No, actually, it's doubled in the last in the last 8 years.
Uh-huh.
It's doubled the population, so they're looking at more about 7,000 countywide.
Wow, and how many in the city would you estimate?
Probably about 5,000. Yeah.
So you don't think that armory could take 5,000 people, do you?
No, heck no.
So,
but a lot of your homeless people are counted in the people that are counted in their RVs, you know, the people who live there, they're counted as homeless, even though they're not, you know.
But how many, when I ask you this, because I know in Santa Barbara really was a pioneer in the struggle against the sleeping bans in this country. You actually got rid of yours for a few years. But you have a lot of people outside who are still subject to that sleeping ban who really couldn't get into the armory if they wanted to, because there would really be no space, right, if everybody came at once.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's the trip. But there's a lot of homeless people out here that do have access to some form of shelter.
Uh-huh.
Like families can go into a transition house until they're filled up. Women have got the rescue mission, which they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, those people could use, you know. Sometimes there's room at the rescue mission for women.
Mm-hmm.
At the they have a special place for women, but because of the programming and stuff like that, people aren't ready for it.
Well, what I've been trying. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
They like going there because it's too controlling and we're told how to live their lives.
Right. So, no, I hear you. That's a problem, and, you know.
There's a lot of independent people out on the streets.
As there should be.
And they don't want to be they don't want to be put into a program. In order for you to get into those places, you have to go into the program.
Well, you know, what I'm thinking, though, is that you still have, I assume, if you have 5,000 homeless people in Santa Barbara alone, you probably have hundreds of people who, of necessity, have to sleep out at some point.
This year, I mean, there are people that are unique in their abilities to shelter themselves, and they don't go into the armory, so they shelter themselves outside.
Right, and of course they face the wrath of the Santa Barbara sleeping ban, right?
Yeah.
What is that law, and what does it do to people who sleep outside?
Well, what happens is, it really isn't against the law to sleep, per se. But what happens is, it is against the law to camp. Because we got a thing where there's a definition of sleeping between, there's a difference between just sleeping with a sleeping bag,
mm-hmm.
and camping.
Mm-hmm.
Which means you have your stove or your tent or whatever, and supposedly nobody's supposed to be getting a ticket for sleeping, but the cops have been giving out camping tickets anyway. So that means that.
And that was Nancy McCready of Santa Barbara. We're going to be following up on that hopefully on Sunday, but. As expected, Uncle Dennis is here and going to be zipping at you with Earth First and all those strange outdoor noises that seem to just flood the studio and come trickling out of your radio whenever he enters the scene. So, hey, we're going to pick up on these tapes, and we're going to cover the strange case of Police Chief Steve Belcher. That will also be hopefully on our Sunday show. And we're also going to cover this phone call before we go.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I don't want to be on the air.
You don't?
Well, no.
Call back.
And there you have it, the mystery caller who doesn't want to be on the air. But do call back, caller, in about 2 or 3 minutes, or you can reach me on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 4833. Yeah, definitely come back and join us on Sunday at 11 o'clock, and we're going to be picking up on these subjects. If you're interested in fighting the sleeping ban, we haven't stopped, and we're at 423-HUFF, and we're organizing even as I continue to babble on. The organizing takes place across the city, disorganized as it may be. So that's all I've got time to do now, but we're going to go out on the strains of Kristen Lems and her famous song from Oh Mama, Mammary Glands.
Human utter, a natural mammalian sight.
take a peek at what drives men insane. Well, they're in anthro books galore, and I'm just sure that you'll adore them. Cave women have the same two simple mammary glands. Whoa, whoa, Mother Nature's dairy delight. You can't make cream of butter, cause it's just a human udder, a natural mammalian sight. The men decided that a certain shape stands out more than the rest. Well, they made such a major issue, women stuff their bras with tissue, cause shoulders back to look their best, show off their mammary glands. Whoa, whoa, Mother Nature's dairy delight. You can't make cream of butter, cause it's just a human udder, a natural mammalian sight. So don't be shy, they'll pay. Though once you finally sold out, you may get a centerfold out. They dig your dug you up away with famous mammary glands. Whoa, whoa, Mother Nature's dairy delight. You can't make cream of butter, cause it's just a human udder, a natural mammalian sight. It's a multi-million dollar enterprise, but no one knows what it's about. We bust the myth, we would defy it. We might stand up and shout, they're only mammary glands. Whoa, whoa, Mother Nature's dairy delight. You can't make cream of butter, cause it's just a human udder, a natural mammalian sight, a natural mammalian sight.
All right, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We've got everything you need except a license. Right, Robert?
I'm afraid that's the case, I guess.
Yeah, did we lose that license or what?
I don't think we ever had the license, but I'm still looking for it. But it could be over here somewhere.
Could be over there. Well, Robert's going to look around our new spacious studios to see if he can find our license anywhere. But frankly, folks, we don't need no stinking license. All right, I'm going to try and figure out our new setup here because it's so spiffy and neat. I want to thank the folks who put all of this stuff together. It's really cool.
Go Free Radio.
Yeah, we have some of the finest non-technical technical staff in the world right here. And we've got more knobs and bells and whistles than I've ever seen. So I'm going to certainly try and get this thing going, so hang on. Listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees. Something, everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run. But there's nowhere to go when the job is done. Stand by while this all takes place. We got to stop living human race. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise in the defense of Mother Earth. Earth.
replace the man. It's all gone for nuclear plans. Plus we poison water, earth, and air. Just to cook a piece of toast or blow dry our hair. No compromise in defense of Mother Earth. Earth First.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Every week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for the activists out on the front lines of the environmental movement. In this segment, we're going to have some announcements about things going on this summer. We're going to have the epic update and action alert. We're going to talk about some upcoming logging in the Headwaters Forest. That's right, logging in the Headwaters Forest. And a little note here that Home Depot pledges to never stop selling old growth wood. We'll have news about activists in trouble and some animal news too. Little prairie dogs and little salmon. Anyway, we'll try and get to all this news here. In these stories, you'll hear about the folks who are killing the planet and the folks who are trying to save it. Some of them have detailed information, but they all have names, addresses, telephone numbers, fax numbers, email, or web addresses. So go grab a pencil and a pen, some recycled paper to write down the information, because this is not, and I repeat, ain't couch potato radio. It's activist radio, and I urge you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods up in a tripod or a tree sit, unless you bring your cell phone along, or locked down at the road blockade. Of course, Earth First Radio can use your help. If you have announcements or news about what's going on in your bioregion, send it by email to cruzief@cruzio.com. That's C-R-U-Z-E-F @cruzio.com. And